Welcome to Kibbe on Liberty. Jordan, how's it going?
So good. So good to see you.
Yeah, this is a big week for you. The first week results are in for Cabrini, but I want to warn everybody, I don't know exactly where we're going to go with this conversation, but there may be spoilers, and you should go see the film for yourself. I don't feel so guilty about spoiling some of the plot, since it is in fact a historical event.
I think there's this place called Google where you can find some of the information, but definitely.
We were talking about this last night, and I don't think I'm unusual, because I had never heard of her before. It's not a small feat to finally bring this story to the big screen. But tell me, you're the president of Angel Studios, and you guys acquired the distribution rights to this film. How did this come about? Because this happened before your tremendous success with Sound of Freedom. So it's something you guys have been working on for quite some time.
Yeah, so we met the producer quite a while ago. I want to say this is back in 2022. And Eustace Wolfington and Leo Severino and Jonathan Singer, the guys who produced this, they're incredible people. And we connected with them. We connected really, really well. But we were just launching our theatrical division. Like, we hadn't even launched His Only Son, which is the first movie we put into theaters that, you know, got top 3 in the box office, surprised everybody. But it was just a small little, you know, film. And then between that film and Sound of Freedom, we started having more deep conversations with them about, hey, what would it look like if we took this to distribution around the world? And the first thing we needed to know was, does the Angel Guild love it? That's always our first question. We want to know, does the Angel Guild love it? Because as founders and executives, no matter how much I love a project, if the Angel Guild, the 250,000 members around the world, don't say, yes, this is something we want, that it amplifies light, we can't take it on. And so it went sailing through the Angel Guild. They absolutely loved it. It's one of our highest scores we've ever seen. It's like, okay, we really want this. So when the Angel Guild gets excited about something, we get really excited about it, because that means there's something really powerful here. And so we started talking to them more deeply, but the reality was it was kind of an uphill battle, because this isn't a film, unlike Sound of Freedom, which was kind of rejected by Hollywood. This is a film that actually multiple major studios want. It's so beautiful, and it's so well done. Alejandro did such an incredible job. Not all the studios, but there were some major studios that were in the contending for it. And I remember Eustace, we went out to, Jeff Neal and I went out to his offices in Philadelphia. And we spent an entire day with him walking through what our strategy would be, how we'd handle this, and what we think the potential of this film is. And it was such an incredible day, because we connected so deeply, both on an emotional and a spiritual level. And after, you know, before Sound of Freedom came out, we ended up inking the deal with the Cabrini team for worldwide, acquiring the worldwide rights. And I remember in a conversation with Eustace, where someone was basically saying, hey, so why did you go with Angel? And he said, I was looking for the people who would have the most passion for what this film is, who truly believed in the film more than just as like a money-making thing. Like, they believed deeply in what it was. And he's like, and I found that in Angel. And that was touching, because we had another producer one time say, the reason I think Angel hits at such a high rate in terms of project after project after project, and he says, I've never seen a distribution studio put their entire heart and soul behind anything. Everything that you guys take on, you put your entire heart and soul on, and it's not wrong. Like, we literally collapse across the finish line for these theatrical releases and the launches of our TV shows. And so we're honored that the filmmakers can see that they can feel our passion for what we're doing, and we could not be more grateful for partners in the Cabrini team.
So I met Eustace Wolfington last night, the executive producer, at a screening on Capitol Hill, and he told a little bit about this story. And I think it's interesting that Cabrini, she represents, in my mind, just sort of radical entrepreneurship and not taking no for an answer and pushing through bureaucracies and fighting big government and all of that stuff. And he was inspired by her as a young man to become a successful entrepreneur himself. But I would suggest that going with you guys is an act of risk-taking, particularly back when this deal was signed, because you're sort of going outside of the system and hoping that there's a better way to distribute your passion project.
There was no Sound of Freedom. There was no Sound of Freedom, no shit, the shift. After that, none of those releases had happened. We'd had one success in the theatrical space, his only son. And so it was absolutely a leap of faith for them.
Yeah. But it seems to be paying off. You guys had a pretty good week. I thought you were going to overtake Kung Fu Panda 4, but...
that was never our expectation. This film we picked this weekend very intentionally because all through the month of March, there's not a lot of other huge films that are coming out and coming in April. And so we very intentionally went after International Women's Day for a couple of reasons, but one of them being that this film we knew, you know, to get people to go see the film about a quote-unquote nun is very, very difficult. But we knew that if we could get the locations and that we could fill up the first weekend seats in a meaningful way, that the word of mouth would start spreading on this because it's so beautiful and so powerful. And if you look at the ratings, you know, from the audiences, this is the highest rated film from audiences on a wide release this entire year. It's 98% from audiences. We were shocked and surprised to see that it's even 91% from critics because they usually hate what we do. But that being said, this film is bridging the gap across the entire world and across the culture. And so we feel strongly that not only did we have a really exciting opening week coming in at number 4 with over $7 million, which, again, most faith-based films don't do that in their entire life cycle. But we believe this is going to go on a long run inside the theater system that's going to shock everybody.
So, like this phrase, faith-based film, is that a positive or a negative? Because I would argue that this isn't really a faith-based film. This is a more universal film about one tough, unstoppable lady who just happens to be a nun. But it's not really about that. What's the positives and negatives in terms of just reaching a broad audience? Because I can see where faith-based film draws in the faithful, but does it turn off other people?
That's one of the beautiful things about this film, is it's one of the first films in a very, very long time that is attracting both the faith audience and the secular audience. Like this film, like you said, is a very universal story. And it's been awesome to watch that because I think the one thing that is really awe-inspiring about this film is that Alejandro Monteverde, he didn't just create a story in a movie, he created a cinematic masterpiece. Every single frame, every shot, every scene is like a painting. And there was one of the reviews that I really, really loved that was just super powerful that said, this is, you know, this gives Martin Scorsese a run for his money because it's just so beautiful. And so that's really, really resonating with people. But on top of that, what's really resonating with people is I think that this is a true woman hero. You know, last year, Barbie was all the rave. Everybody was excited about Barbie for whatever reason. And I think that Cabrini is showing us a true hero who lived, that's real. And she did it through a powerful mentality. One of the things that's really happening now in our culture is this victim mentality. And it's not healthy. Everybody kind of lists their, you know, they want to see what you know, minorities or victimhood they can kind of fall into. And it's exact. There's the quote in the movie that I love where she says, you can't choose how you're brought into this world, but you can choose how you live in it. And I was shocked when I saw a review from The Observer, who's very hard on these type of films, generally speaking. But like you said, this is a more universal film. He said, you can keep your Barbie, I'll take Cabrini. And it's because this film resonates. There's so much truth interwoven through a beautiful cinematic narrative that people are just being blown away by it. Angel Studios has never had so many reviews on a film that said this is not just a great film, this is one of the best films I've ever seen.
Free the People is embarking on our most ambitious project to date to document and expose the lies behind the greatest public health failure in my lifetime. We're talking to insiders with firsthand knowledge of the government's role in funding, creating, and then covering up the COVID-19 virus in our exclusive new documentary series, The Cover-Up. But I need your help. We won't get to the bottom of this scandal alone, so I'm asking viewers to crowdsource any information that could be helpful to our investigation. If you're watching this, you already know what the government did during lockdowns was unforgivable. Help us get to the truth and prevent it from ever happening again. To get involved, go to freethepeople.org/coverup. That's freethepeople.org/coverup. The truth is out there.
So Terry, my wife, and I had an argument after the film last night that we have all the time. We have this all the time, and we give speeches about this and all sorts of things. But she considers herself an anti-feminist, and I consider myself a radical feminist. And we mean exactly the same thing. So it's a question of semantics. And you know, a lot of my heroes are women who were just tough and tenacious and insistent that they could in fact achieve what they wanted to achieve in their lives. And that's my definition of feminism. And Terry is as a very strong, successful woman, is very triggered by modern feminism that frames it as some sort of victimhood kind of thing. So there's a line towards the end of the movie where Cabrini says, the corrupt fictional mayor of New York says, you'd make a good man. And she says something to the effect of, this is a spoiler, by the way. She says something to the effect of, men can't do what women do. And she was triggered by that. But I'm like, yes, this is awesome. Because she's not accepting this paradigm where men are somehow more capable than women, and to me, again, that's a universal theme. But this I assume this is why you guys decided to release on National Women's Day, and everyone's going to have this debate about, is this a feminist movie? Is this not a feminist movie? What is this thing?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting you say that because. So I saw a comment on Twitter where it was like, is Cabrini woke? Like, what is this? And to me, the definition of woke, at least in its current incarnation, is victimhood, right? And this is the exact opposite of that. This is someone taking over their own life, you know, doing it in a way that's so powerful. And that line is so, so powerful when you understand the story behind that line. Because Alejandro Monteverde, he truly wanted the world to understand that there is a distinct difference and complementary difference between men and women. And he built that line and a lot of the movie around that line to make sure people understood that, like, there is this idea that, you know, men have to pretend to be, or women have to pretend to be men and vice versa. Like, he wanted the world to understand that men and women are both so powerful, but they're distinctly different. They are different and complementary. And the moment we forget that as a society, we start to fall apart and crumble. And that we're both needed. And so one of the things I love about this film is that it didn't do any hating on men. There was obviously, you know, the mayor who was the villain, but the majority of the men are nuanced, complicated people. They're not just one-dimensional men who don't have any person, like, there's nuance there as to why they made their decisions they did. And so it's such a powerful, powerful movie and a powerful, powerful theme. I'm probably more in the camp of your wife, to be honest, where I have been so turned off by the hijacking of the feminist movement and what it's become that I that word to me, feminism, is almost like it's almost like a yuck word because it's just so victim mentality. And this movie does so much to help people realize that that's not what this life is about. One of the things I love about Cabrini is she literally goes in and says, you know, to everybody around her, she doesn't wait for the government to come solve her problems. She doesn't go wait for, you know, people to come solve her problems for her. She goes and instigates and figures out how to solve those problems in a really, really powerful way. And it's such an incredible movie.
So I like to filter everything through my weird libertarian brain. So
I'm the same way.
Yeah. the themes that I heard in this movie, and I wasn't necessarily expecting to hear these stories. I actually thought I was going to see a faith-based film about a Catholic nun that sort of pursues her faith and her beliefs and does all this stuff. And it is absolutely that, but it's something more profound for me, which is a stubborn act of entrepreneurship. And you have someone that has this vision for changing the world, and she wants to start, essentially start all of these businesses. And every step of the way, she runs into Catholic Church bureaucracy, but eventually gets the ear of the Pope. And then she runs into just endless government bureaucracy, people that not only don't care if she succeeds, but actively work against her success for all sorts of evil reasons. And to me, that's a story that's a very American story of people rising up against this. And it's also a story about personal responsibility and not waiting for the government to solve the problems of poverty and other social things. She did it for herself. So I like, in a lot of ways, this is a very libertarian movie.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It really resonated with me because as an entrepreneur and libertarian myself, I felt this deep connection with what she went through. And then watching her, you know, there's, you know, without giving away too much, there's a scene where she's told by the leadership of the church that she cannot go raise money from Americans. She has to only raise money from Italian immigrants. And so she was just like, okay, well, instead of going and raising money directly for them, she goes and has the newspaper write a story about the plight of what's happening to the impoverished Italians. And it tugs at the heartstrings. And then she starts these private enterprises through orphanages and hospitals. And again, the government just at every turn is trying to shut her down. And I'm cheering for her as an entrepreneur and libertarian. Like, just don't stop. You have to get to the end of this. And it's amazing. It is absolutely amazing because she truly built an empire of hope around the world that was as big as any empire built by even people like the Rockefellers, which is incredible.
Thank you for joining me today on Kibbe on Liberty and for being part of our fiercely independent audience. Every week, my organization, Free the People, partners with Blaze TV to bring you this show. My guests bring smart perspectives on everything from current events to timeless philosophical debates. If you like what you hear, go to freethepeople.org/KOL and support Kibbe on Liberty so we can continue to produce these honest conversations with interesting people. Now, let's get back to it.
Yeah, it became, and it sort of maps it out at the end of the movie, the global enterprise that she said she was going to create. And I think the Pope, a little bit patronizingly, said, good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the vision was too big. And it was implausible in the world that she was living in, but then she did it anyway. Let's talk about production values, because I'm just spitballing here, but I have an idea for if you want to rebrand this film slightly. I think a better name than Cabrini would be The Nuns of New York.
That's a great name.
Invoking the great Martin Scorsese film, The Gangs of New York, because
yes,
you know, when I'm watching it, it more than a little bit invokes that Five Points vibe, you know, very subsistence, dirty, dangerous
world that she arrived in, and it kind of looked like Gangs of New York, which is an impeccably the film itself, like
you feel like you're in the 19th century. You feel like you're in the 1880s in New York every moment.
And this film had a big budget. I think it was like a $50 million budget, but I don't know what Gangs of New York or Godfather, which also sort of invoked some of that imagery for me. It's still a budget film compared to some of the big boys. Is that right? Or is 50 million
like a real
deal? So this
film, you know, it was a little less than that, but the film itself looks like a $100 or $200 million budget film today, which is incredible. Like they made every dollar count and hit that screen as best they possibly could, because this film, it just, you walk into it and it's like, it's from the moment that you start. Anybody who's seen this film, if you haven't, get to the theaters, buy your tickets. But like the moment that first scene runs with the boy, you're just like, whoa, like what is going on? And you are hooked. And so it absolutely has that feeling of a Scorsese type film and production value. And my brother Neil said, this isn't like a motion picture. This is a motion painting. And part of the reason that that's really, really powerful, and the reason that the visuals look so stunning, is when Alejandro Monteverde took on this project, he said, I don't want to do a story about a nun. I have no desire to do this, but he felt called to do it. And he said, if I'm going to do this, I want to do it in black and white. And he built the sets. When you shoot in black and white and you do the lighting in black and white, you have to do it differently. You have to put more texture and layers, because color can kind of hide stuff in the production value. Whereas with black and white, you have to have a lot of layers, a lot of different type of distinct colors and textures in the background so that they pop onto the screen. And he wanted to do black and white because he didn't want the Cabrini to stand out from the rest of the film. He wanted people to forget that she was a nun. And so they did all their pre-production that way, and they got up to the week before shooting. And Eustace Wolfington comes in to the room and says, guys, I feel like this needs to be in color. And they're like, whoa, no, that doesn't, you can't just like change this on this last minute. We're shooting this in black and white. We built the sets this way. The lighting, everything was built this way. And he's like, no, I really feel like this needs to be in color. And they didn't have time to rebuild the sets or to do, you know, any of the changes that they want. They had to shoot it all with the new lens in color, but with all that texture and all that rich production value that was built specifically for black and white. And it ended up becoming a gorgeous cinematic masterpiece. And this isn't just me saying this. This is, the audience is scoring this at 98% across the board. It's close to being one of the top rated films in history. You know, on the IMDb list, it's hitting up on that top 100 list because it's so beautiful. And it was a last minute strategy change where they went from black and white, we're going to shoot this in black and white, to this needs to be in color. And it ended up creating something so unique that it has never been done before.
Perhaps, they accidentally discovered a new technique for creating.
Photo.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You talked about this, and I know the last time we had a conversation a couple years ago at Freedom Fest, I think we talked a lot about the Angel Studios Guild. Talk about that model, because I think, you know, the sort of broader conversation that we haven't touched on here is how you're disrupting the industry by engaging both consumers and essentially crowdsourced investors to work on projects that sort of break the Hollywood model. Explain to people in more depth, because I think the Guild has evolved quite a bit since the last time we talked anyway.
Yeah, it has. It's the Guild is such a unique thing, because we believe that the problem in Hollywood isn't a problem with actually the productions. The productions are incredible. They're the greatest storytellers that the world has ever comprised in the history of the world. The problem's in the gatekeepers. There's a gatekeeper problem, that they're picking stuff that is not what shouldn't be made or needs to be made. It's very nihilistic. And so what we decided to do is, instead of us just becoming like I remember when, you know, The Chosen blew up, everybody started saying, well, now you guys can just go, you know, fund all your own stuff and pick all your own shows and stuff. We said, no, our goal is not to become Hollywood like Hollywood is today. We want to create a company that's going to last for 100 years. And the way we're going to do that is we created the Angel Guild. So the Angel Guild is 250,000 members and growing, where people can join the Angel Guild. They pay $20 a month. And as they join the Angel Guild, they get a bunch of perks like early access to our content. They get to screen movies like Cabrini when we're doing test screenings. They get to be the first to vet the movies. So before an executive or founder like myself can even green light a project for distribution, it first has to pass the Angel Guild. And then on top of that, they get 2 free tickets, complimentary tickets to every Angel theatrical release. They get discounts on merch. So there's all these perks that come with being an Angel Guild member. But the most important one is they are the alternative gatekeepers to the Hollywood system. It is when people understand that the reason Hollywood spends so much money, resources, energy on the entertainment space is because that is what will literally craft the culture that we see in 20 years, they will realize that the mechanism by which they can influence culture most is by becoming a member of the Angel Guild and helping us find the next Sound of Freedom or the next Cabrini or the next Shift or whatever it is, because these films are so great, not just from a, you know, principle standpoint, but they're so entertaining and so magnificent. And so this guild is such a pivotal part of what we do at Angel. And we also believe it's a pivotal part of changing the culture for the next 20, 30 years. You go to Times Square, 80% of the advertisements are film and TV. Why? It's because there's lots of other businesses out there. Why are most of the entertainment? And it's because that is what really crafts our culture. And we believe that the Angel Guild is the mechanism for us bringing the culture back to a place where we feel is more sustainable and honoring and loving.
So when Sound of Freedom came out, I had your brother Jeffrey on, and we were talking about this revelation, and maybe it comes from the director who directed both of these films, and I'll let you repeat his name because it's a mouthful. But
Alejandro Monteverde.
thank you. You even rolled your R's correctly. But is he the one, remind me, but is he the one that realized that being in a theater with other people to experience these films as a community with a sense of belonging was so profound? Because I think I am guilty of predicting that theaters had been killed by lockdowns and technology and shifting markets and everything else. Somebody in your orbit discovered or insisted that these are things that need to be watched together, and that has shifted your strategy back towards a theater-based distribution model.
Yes, yeah. Well, there's multiple people. Alejandro is one of them for sure. Another one is Andrew Peterson. He wrote a blog post quite a while ago called "The Sacrament of the Cinema," and he basically talks about how, as a culture, we thrive off of communal experiences where we do them together, and that's why, you know, religious behavior happens if people go and they go and worship together. But when you go into these sacraments, you usually give up all your distractions, all your devices. You give up your personal will, and you go in and you learn what is being taught in not only in your mind but in your heart. And he says that the cinema has a similar effect, in that you're going in, you're silencing your cell phones, you're getting rid of all your distractions, and as a community you are connecting with the art at the deepest and most intimate level. And at home you have your distractions, your phone, your computer, your kid, you name it. Like, people have all these different distractions, and so there's something powerful about how the cinema can truly change the hearts and minds of a culture. And I think that a lot of people in Hollywood know this. When you look at Scorsese, he said, I think 2 or 3 years ago, he said, you want to really influence culture, you do it through the cinema. And he was doing it in the context of people saying, well, Netflix and Apple TV Plus. And he said, yeah, those are all great, you know, I love telling stories on some of those mediums, but the real way to influence culture, the real way to impact the world is through the cinema. And there's something powerful about that. And so we at Angel, obviously, we still are totally focused on delivering incredible TV shows that will help, you know, provide meaningful content on a regular basis. But the cinema is going to be a huge part of Angel's strategy because we do believe that that is the mechanism by which we can actually help change the culture to a better way for the next 20 years for our children and our grandchildren.
At Kibbe on Liberty, freedom is a lifestyle 24/7, something you live and breathe and wear every day. If that describes you, you need the very best Liberty swag in the market today, just like this shirt I happen to be wearing. Go to freethepeople.org/KOL and check out our exciting merch. You too can love Liberty and look cool.
So that gets to the distribution question, because you managed to get this film into, I think it was 2,800 theaters. And the first week gross was, I think, $7.5 million, which is not small potatoes. What is the theater strategy, to the extent that you can reveal this top secret business thing?
Yeah. So we've been really fortunate to have incredible partners at Cinemark, Regal, AMC. They've been so supportive. It's been really fun because they are, you know, they love our stories and they love that we're driving people into cinemas again. And that's such an important part of our model. You know, one of the articles that was actually just posted recently is there's a conference called CinemaCon, which is it's where all the theaters kind of congregate and show up, and we are the, you know, title sponsor of CinemaCon this year. As a matter of fact, IndieWire posted an article that said, while Apple and Amazon talk about supporting theaters, it is Angel Studios that will present at CinemaCon. And that we are leaning into this and into this relationship because we do believe strongly that this is so powerful about getting our stories out there. And we it is our tendency to zig when others zag. So while everybody's pivoting away from the theatrical model, we understand the power of cinema, and we look at it as an incredible opportunity for us to access a massive audience. You know, the Angel Guild approved Sound of Freedom, for example, in Cabrini. It approved Sound of Freedom. Only 1,000 people randomly were sampled around the nation, and they said, yes, this has to come out. And because of those 1,000 guild members, there are over 30 million people that saw it in cinemas around the world. On our best estimates, there are tens of millions that saw it on Amazon Prime when it hit Amazon Prime. It was in the top 10 and number one movie on Amazon Prime for a while. And so this is impacting culture around the world. Although the industry of entertainment is a $750 billion industry, and only $50 billion of that is from the cinema, of $50 billion is the tip of the spear that influences all the rest. Like, it is the mechanism for which culture is influenced and made.
So do you almost wish that Cabrini was trashed by establishment media the same way that that Sound of Freedom was? Because it generated so much buzz. And I'm sure some people are like, well, they don't want me to see this, so I'm going to go see it. It cuts both ways,
yeah,
right?
Sure. It does. And we're totally fine with the movie just, you know, resting on its own laurels. Like I said, it's not Sound of Freedom in its own, you know, event that just blew up in the zeitgeist, and Cabrini's going to have its own path to being a box office success and IP that's successful down in downstream windows. And so we're really excited about it. There's lots of ways to carve that out, but I will be honest. I have been surprised by the positive reviews from critics. Like, that it has blown me away. I remember when the first one came in, it was from the Hollywood Reporter, and they were like, this is a great movie. I was just like, what? Like, you, I mean, they have been the most critical about Angel and what we're doing out of like almost anybody. And I was like, Hollywood Reporter saying this is a great movie. So we've been blown away by the response from both the audience and critics, but that's not a bad thing. This is going to have a long, long life cycle in the theaters, and it's going to be seen by millions and millions of people around the world. So we're fine with it going this way or the other way. You definitely don't, you know, get that angry about controversy, especially when it's totally manufactured and ridiculous.
Yeah. I saw a couple of reviews of Cabrini that said, you know, I thought I was going to hate this because It's being distributed by those Angel guys. But you know what? It was a good film.
Yeah, exactly.
So one other story before we get into how people can get involved. I don't know the story, but at the end of the movie, you have a beautiful song from Andrea Bocelli and his daughter, Virginia. And she plays a small part in the film. Apparently, you guys were involved in making that a realization.
Yes.
Is there a cool story there?
There is a really cool story there. They had actually Andrea Bocelli's daughter, Virginia Bocelli. She was she's in the movie, and so they had a good relationship with her, and they tried and tried and tried for months and months and months to get them to do a song, and it just for whatever reason wasn't working out. And so, you know, we said, hey, if we can make this happen, it's got to happen because it's such an important song. And it's such a, like, Andrea is such an icon in the world. And so we put all of our resources behind it. Our head of music, his name is Ryan Sesden. He you know, helps with the La La Land and many other incredible soundtracks around the world. And he's coming as our head of music. And he and our team put together an incredible deal that allowed Andrea Bocelli to do that song, and it's now in the credits of this film. But it is a song that, I mean, my kids have it on repeat. Like, it is so beautiful and so touching and so inspiring. But it was amazing because we made up our mind that we were going to go get the song with Andrea and his team about 3 weeks before we had to deliver the files to the theaters, the DCP. And that is not enough time to pull that together. And by a miracle, Ryan was able to get not only connected with their team, get a deal in place, help them shoot the music video. We edited the music video and got the entire thing launched in a matter of weeks. And that's just, I mean, that just doesn't happen. It's incredible.
Yeah. I would assume that in and of itself is a form of guerrilla marketing where people are going to hear this song over time and sort of follow the breadcrumbs back to find the movie after they find the song.
Yep. It's going to be a beautiful thing.
By the way, I'm quite resentful as someone that can't sing at all.
I feel the same way.
Apparently it's cool to be born a Botticelli because she, and I think she's 11, and listening to this song, she has a huge voice. And that's amazing to me, but I feel like you and I probably can't do what she can do.
No, we cannot. Not even close.
Yeah. So let's start with the Guild, but then let's talk about how people can find this film and if they really love this film, how they can pay it forward.
So to answer your question about the Angel Guild, you know, it's such a powerful thing that the audience can come into and they can experience and enjoy. Not only do they get to screen things early and get exclusive perks, but they are influencing culture for the world for the better. And you can actually, you know, join the Angel Guild and buy tickets for Cabri right now by using that URL, angel.com/Cabri. And that will allow you to come in and enjoy these incredible opportunities. It's one of the coolest things to see comments come in where someone's like, I greenlit Cabrini. Like I was one of the first people to watch it. And now it's going and being seen by millions of people around the world. And so that's such a powerful, powerful thing. And we're so grateful. It's growing very, very fast. You know, we're at 250,000 people and we want millions of people in that guild to help influence and nurture the culture to where we feel like it should go. And we also think this is going to be more sustainable because, again, we're humans. As much as I wish I could say that I'm going to pick all the best content for the rest of my life, you know, that would be me having the hubris of anybody in Hollywood. And the reality is we believe that you, the audience, can pick better than any executive. And so as an aggregate, you're making better decisions than anybody in Hollywood, showing time and time and time again.
So explain Pay It Forward, because this is a model you use so successfully during Sound of Freedom, and I've seen the ads, but tell people, like, once they see this and they decide this is something I want to help other people reach, what is the pay it forward function?
Yeah, you can. You, the whole idea behind Pay It Forward was the idea that if you are touched or love something, just like you're in a Starbucks line and you go, "Man, you know, I'm gonna pay for the person behind me their drink." This is that opportunity where when you're in the theater and you love the film, you can at the end of the film scan the QR code that pops up, pay it forward so someone else who wouldn't otherwise see this can see it. And then if you're someone who can't afford to go to the theater, like me as a child when I was growing up, you can go to angel.com/free tickets and get your own free ticket. There are literally thousands upon thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands of tickets that have been paid for by other people, and we want you to use them. That is what they are there for. And so please, you know, if you can't afford it or wouldn't otherwise go see this film, go get a free ticket. But if for some reason you're so inclined and you feel like you were inspired and touched by this movie, pay it forward so other people can experience this. It is a very powerful model that allows for us to spread these messages to all corners of the earth.
Okay, Jordan. Congratulations on a good first week. I'm
Thank you,
not going to
Matt.
hold
We're
it
really
against you
grateful.
that you didn't beat Kung Fu Panda 4.
Come
Honestly, and it's I'll get a lot of
on,
haters for this, but I couldn't even get through Kung Fu Panda 1. So I'm not the target
Jeez.
audience for
Oh,
Kung
my
Fu Panda
goodness.
4.
And we our guerrilla marketing is totally different. You know, they'll spend $100 billion on marketing a film and we spend fractions of that and get the results we do. So we're really, really grateful.
Okay, we'll talk again when the next blockbuster comes up.
Awesome. Appreciate it, guys.
Thank you. Thanks for watching. If you liked the conversation, make sure to like the video, subscribe, and also ring the bell for notifications. And if you want to know more about Free the People, go to freethepeople.org.